So his heart overflows, and we get this doxology. Oh, the depth of the riches of wisdom and knowledge of God! How unsearchable his judgments, and his paths are beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? For from him and through him and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Just a reminder of where we've gone in this series so far. We've been thinking about life in the modern world. First, we thought about issues of image and identity, this huge question that swirls around in our culture. Who are we and how do we know? Then we moved on to think about the biggest thing that occupies people's time in many ways, their smartphones and technology. Questions of what does it look like as a Christian to engage well with technology? How do Christians use smartphones in ways that honour the Lord? This week we're thinking about kind of things that we watch or listen to. All of us will probably engage with content in different ways. Some of us will be those who sit and watch on a regular television. Others don't even really know what a TV license is because it's all on Netflix now. Others of us will engage with media primarily by reading books of fiction. Others of us will listen to podcasts. Loads of different ways that we can know and engage with the media that our world is pumping out. The question is, how, as Christians, do we do that in a way that honours the Lord? We're thinking about this question, discipled by Disney, how do I honour the Lord with what I watch? How do I honour the Lord with what I watch? I guess when it comes to issues, particularly of television, but other bits of media as well, there are two basic options that people often revert to, that Christians can often go to. One is that we turn it on and we switch off. We turn it on and we switch off. That is, we flick on the TV, turn off our minds, and just let it passively wash over us. Just consume and consume because I'm exhausted and that's all I can do. Turn it on and switch off. Or alternatively, the second option is we say, well, the problem is that anything the world produces is awful. And so we can't engage with any of it. And so what we need to do is turn it off and keep it off. Turn it off and switch off. Or turn it off and keep it off. It's my aim this afternoon in the next half an hour, 40 minutes or so, to convince you that there is a better option. That there's a better option than either of those. It's an option where we watch things, where we engage with what the world produces. But we do so in a way that honours the Lord. We do so in a way that we see some of the stories our world is telling. And that we see how Jesus is better than all those stories. And that that equips us to better speak of Christ in a world desperate to know him. That's my aim this afternoon. And we're going to start by having a quick discussion. So do kind of break into threes and fours where you are. A couple of questions will appear on the screen. What are you watching or reading at the moment? You're not allowed to say Christian books or the Bible. Just, or like Pilgrim's Progress, the film, or anything like that. What non-Christian kind of secular things are you watching or reading at the moment, and what do you enjoy about it? So threes, fours, fives, whatever number you want, and discuss those for a few minutes. That may be for good, that may be for bad. I'm not going to ask you to all feedback on the different things that you enjoy. I would say there are two big positive reasons to engage in this area. The first is that we care about discipleship. As Christians, we care about following Jesus. Now, I don't know how many hours a week you spend reading books, You spend watching films or series, watching the news. My guess is that if you add it up, the average person probably spends a couple of hours a night, a few nights a week, plus maybe a little bit extra at weekends, which means you quite quickly get to probably about 10% of your waking hours. Some of you will be way more than that. Some of you will be less than that. But if you think about that, you spend about 10% on average of your waking hours engaging with this kind of content. That means about 10% of your Christian discipleship is about how you do this as a Christian. So it is really important that we think about it. Secondly, it's important because we care about evangelism. We care about evangelism. So there's this really interesting section of 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Paul says these words, "Jews demand signs, and Greeks look for wisdom." What does he see? He's observed the different cultures of his day, and he sees that by observing cultures, you see that Jews value signs, that is, acts of miracle, acts of power. Greeks, the philosophers of the age, they look for wisdom. That's what they value. Paul goes on, "We preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God." So he has seen that the two cultures of his day that he's engaged with value power and wisdom. And so as he proclaims Christ to them, the unchanging Christ, he does it in language that they understand, things they value. He speaks about Christ as the power of God because Jews demand power. He speaks of Christ as the wisdom of God because the Greeks wanted wisdom. As we observe our culture well, it enables us to speak of Jesus in a way that is appealing to the world around us. Not because we change the message. No, Paul preached Christ crucified, which is a stumbling block to many people. But the way he framed the message was such that to those who were longing for these things and saw that the world couldn't offer them fully, Jesus was the solution. Jesus was truly the wisdom and power of God. And so as we grasp the stories the world is telling, as we grasp the things our culture values, that enables us to speak of Jesus in a way that is really engaging. Two positive reasons to think about it. One reason that we'd be in danger if we don't think about it, and that is we can't hide from our culture even if we want to. So even if we think, well, it's okay, the world is corrupting, so what I'm going to do is I'm never going to read anything it produces. I'm never going to watch anything it produces. It just doesn't work. We just cannot hide from our culture. I promise you, we are all culturally bound, whether we like it or not. There's no point thinking that we can just turn everything off and it will all be fine. Our culture does shape us. And so it's good to try and grasp what our culture is valuing. And watching the things it produces is a really good way to do that. My aim this afternoon, in some ways, is to convince you that watching television, reading a fiction book, those things are a bit like lying on a lilo. They're a bit like lying on a lilo. Let me tell you what I mean by that. So if you go on holiday and you're the kind of person that enjoys lying on a lilo, if you do it on a swimming pool, you can basically fall asleep and nothing is going to go that wrong. You're going to, at worst, end up a few meters away from where you originally fell asleep, unless you have a really horrible friend who just tips it over. That aside, you're not going to end up very far away. You're not going to be in imminent danger. But if you lie on a lilo on the sea and fall asleep, you can be in danger. That is a very blurry picture. I'm sorry, that's the best resolution I can find it. This is someone who'd gone out on a lilo, had fallen asleep, had drifted out into the middle of the ocean and had to be rescued by the Coast Guard. Lilos can be enjoyed and can be enjoyed on the ocean, but don't fall asleep. I think the same is true when it comes to what we watch. Not literally don't fall asleep. But if we think we can just kind of kick back, just let it all wash over us and be passive receivers, and that we won't move, we won't be changed, I don't think that's true. Because we start to buy into the stories that the world is telling. Because we're not even really aware that they're trying to tell them. My message this afternoon is not don't get on a lilo, but don't fall asleep on the lilo. Metaphorically speaking. Keep your wits about you as you watch. And as you do, I want to convince you that not only is it, can you kind of not end up in impurity, but actually it can be genuinely beneficial for you as a Christian to engage with some of what the world is producing. Obviously, caveat up front, there are some things that are absolutely off limits for all Christians that the world produces. I'm going to assume we're going to take that as read from this point forward. So whenever I talk about things that are good to watch, I am not including those things. We don't need to spell out what they are. We all know. Here's the first big thing we're going to see. Storytellers are story sellers. Storytellers are story sellers. Every single person who has ever lived has an instinctive view of the world, an instinctive way that they interpret what's happening around them. People call that a worldview. A kind of set of goggles, a set of lenses, if you like, through which they interpret everything they see. Every person's worldview, every person's view of the world has both good and bad elements. Every single person has both good and bad. Why? Well, if you remember back to like 3 weeks ago when we thought about the question of identity, we saw that every single person, Christian or not, is made in God's image but has sinned and fallen. And therefore, we are distorted images of God now, which means that we both see things that are good and true and value those things, and also those things have become distorted. That is true for every single person in the world. And so every single person's view of the world has both elements of truth, beautiful, glorious truth, and elements of distortion, ugly distortions, that drive us away from Jesus. And when Paul reflects in Romans 1, he talks about this idea of suppressing the truth. He says that actually all of us know something of the truth. We know God's eternal power and his divine nature. We know those things, but we suppress them. Kaziah's just learnt this game that she finds very fun. She's got a kind of plastic ball with a duck in it that she uses at bath time. And she's learnt, because I taught her, that if you push it underwater and let go, it jumps out the bath. That's a bit like what we're like when we're suppressing the truth. All of us by nature, everyone who ever lives, suppresses the truth. That is, we're holding the truth underwater. But every now and then, as we tell our stories, as we interpret the world, it pops up. And so that means that everything that is produced has glimpses of the truth about God in it, even if people don't recognize that's what it is. Everyone's view of the world, and therefore everything they produce, has both good and bad in it. That is true of books, podcasts, songs, films, series, we could go on. And one of the ways to see what our culture values is to see the stories that they're telling, and particularly see the stories that they're telling that are becoming successful, the ones that sell. If you look at the current chart, that's always a fairly good way to work out what our world values. So that's what I did this week. I didn't listen through it because it's painfully dull and I don't really like modern music. But I read the lyrics of the current top 10. Over half of those songs are about relationships, breaking up, or effectively one-night stands. That's about half of the songs coming up. And actually, that is surprisingly low. The only reason it's that low at the moment is because Encanto is dominating the charts. If there's not a new Disney release, then it's normally more like 75%. That shows what our world values. It values relationships. It thinks that pleasure and relationships are the key to a happy life. That as long as we have those things, that life will all work out. Except occasionally, a singer or a songwriter is honest enough to tell you that's not really true. So 5 or 6 years ago, Ed Sheeran released an album called Divide. On it, the headline tracks, often the first track on an album, will tell you quite a lot about what's going on in that album. That first song was called Eraser. Let me read you first the chorus on the left and then one of the songs, the verses on the right, and see if you can see what he's saying. He says this, "I'm well aware of certain things that can destroy a man like me. But with that said, give me one more, higher. Another one to take the sting away. I'm happy on my own, so here I'll stay. Save your loving arms for a rainy day, and I'll find comfort in my pain eraser. I used to think that nothing could be better than touring the world with my songs. I chased a pictured perfect life. I think they painted it wrong. I think that money is the root of evil and fame is hell. Relationships and hearts you fixed, they break as well." This is one of the most successful people in our world today. Someone who people look up to. He looks at his life, successful by all human standards, and he says, it's not the perfect life. I chased it, I got it. They painted it wrong. And so what's his solution to the problem? If you look at that chorus, he knows certain things that destroy him, almost definitely because he's spoken about this in interviews. That's an addiction issue he has with alcohol. He's very aware that that is bad for him. He knows it's not the solution, but it's the only thing he can think to take the sting away. The only thing he can grasp that might help get rid of the pain. And so he tranquilizes himself with alcohol. And then wakes up the next day and has the same battles over and over again. He knows it's not good for him, but he does it anyway. And so as you look at the charts, you can see the stories they're telling. Primarily the story they're trying to sell you is one that relationships and money and fame, they are what will give you happiness in life. But then every now and then a song comes along that shows the folly and the emptiness of those things. Why is that important for us to see as Christians? Because if we see those things, we can see what our world longs for. Pleasure, things that last, satisfaction that goes on forever. And we can see that it doesn't work. And so it can give us incredible confidence to ask our friends where they're seeking pleasure in this world. And when they give answers, to show and expose the fact that that doesn't work. If Ed Sheeran can't find it, we can't. And to take them to somewhere like John 4 and say, here is Jesus, the one who says, you will never thirst if you drink the water that I have to offer. I offer satisfaction that goes on forever. Storytellers are story sellers, and so as we understand their stories, we are equipped to speak into them. Secondly, story sellers can shape our thinking. Story sellers can shape our thinking. See, those who produce films or podcasts or books or whatever are not like double glazing salesmen. Double glazing salesmen, you can see coming a mile off, you know exactly what they're selling. And you know whether you need it or not. And almost always, you don't need it. Actually, those who are producing and trying to sell us their view of the world, sell us these stories, they're much more subtle. They're really good at their job. And so they draw you into the story they want to sell you. And before you know it, you're starting to buy into it. Tell an example of where that happened for me a few years ago. I used to watch a program called Prison Break. Some of you will probably know what that is. Some of you won't have a clue. Basic headline, kind of plot summary of Prison Break. Someone gets put into prison for a crime they don't commit. That's how all Prison Break films or shows start, right? That person's brother thinks, well, he's been wrongly accused of a crime he didn't commit. I'm going to break him out of prison. In order to do that, I'm going to get the blueprints of the whole prison tattooed on my body. Then I'm going to commit a crime that means that I know I'm going to get put in the same prison as him. And then I'm going to break him out. There's a basic plot of how that works. Now, I'm not saying that you can't watch it and enjoy it as a Christian. But here's what happened as I started to watch it. See, because it's set up as someone who's innocently convicted of a crime they didn't commit, it's all about this pursuit of justice. But the problem is that the way it works is that all these kind of characters come up along the sides and keep trying to get in the way of this person breaking out of prison. And so these characters are built up, and then horrible things happen to them. They get tortured or killed, or their lives just fall apart as a result. And what's this whole series trying to tell you? It's basically telling you that's okay, because two wrongs do make a right. It's okay that these incidental characters get harmed because this person has the right to be free. And therefore, this person can do whatever he wants to others as long as he gets his goal at the end. See the problem with that view of the world? Now, they're saying you can watch it and you can engage with that well. I found as I watched it, I was getting sucked in and I was kind of really happy when these incidental characters got their lives ruined, when they got their toes cut off or they got killed or whatever it was. I'd been sucked in by this story that this man's pursuit of justice was worth whatever cost that came alongside it. And so I had to stop watching because I realized that wasn't good for me. So you can be sucked into the stories our world tells. Story sellers can shape our thinking. And that shouldn't surprise us because of those words John read to us from Romans chapter 12. So as you look at Romans chapter 12, you see the pattern, don't you, in verse 2. We're not to conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds. See, it is often as our minds are changed that we know how to, as the verse goes on, test and approve what God's will is. And so, if our minds are being taken captive by the things of this world, That will then cause us to not know, be able to test and approve what God's will is, to be captured by the stories of our world instead. Not to say we can't watch these things, but that we need to have our wits about us as we do. Maybe at this point you're thinking, okay, so everything I'm ever watching or reading is telling me a story, and that story is not God's story of the world. And not only are they telling me these stories, but I'm likely to be captured and trapped by these things. Well, there's only one option, and isn't there? What I need to do is listen to Premier Radio and watch the God Channel all day. Now, I'm not saying that either of those are things you shouldn't do, but I am saying that I don't think that is the only thing we should do. Because Jesus says that his disciples are those who are to be in the world, but not of it. We're not those who are out of the world. We are in the world. God has put us in this cultural moment at this time, and we are to engage with it well. But to do so in a way that honours God, in a way that grasps that the stories the world is telling do have positives. So even in that in Prison Break that I had to stop watching, it does have positives. It values justice. That is something that God cares about. But ultimately, in a flawed way. We've seen that storytellers are story sellers, that story sellers can shape the way we think. Thirdly, we're going to see that Jesus is the best story ever told. Jesus is the best story ever told. Last week on a church weekend, we were looking at the book of Philippians. And in our last session, we were looking at chapter 4. Here are some words from Philippians 4. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Now, ultimately, that is true of Jesus. Jesus is all those things in perfect fullness, perfectly true, perfectly noble, perfectly right, and so on. But because everyone's view of the world has both truth and distortion in it, I am convinced that as we watch and engage with the things of this world, we see flickers of this kind of stuff all over the place. And so I am genuinely convinced that as we watch and engage with what our world produces, we can, if we have our wits about it, come away from it loving Jesus more. We can watch a film that has nothing on the surface to do with Jesus and come away loving Jesus more. Hopefully, I'm going to be able to give you an example of that in a second, which depends on whether we can get a film thing to work. We're going to try and watch an excerpt of a film called Wonder Woman that was released in 2017. We'll watch an excerpt of it towards the very end, so two clips put together. As we watch it, there's a fight scene, that's a classic comic book film, ignore the fighting, it just happens. Listen to the words, and I want to ask two questions of the words. Question number one, how is this like what the Bible has to say? And question two, how is the Bible better than this? How is this like what the Bible has to say? Question two, how is the Bible better than this? And we're going to see if this works.
When you first arrived, I was
let me just summarize what's actually going on. I'm dropping you like an hour and 50 minutes into this film. Basic plot, there's a goodie and a baddie, right? It's a comic book film. The male is the baddie and the female's the goodie. That's about kind of all you need to know. So the guy is evil. The woman, Diana, goddess of the Amazons, Wonder Woman, she's the goodie. That's pretty much all you need to know. But
enough. When you first arrived, I was going to crush you. But I knew that if only you could see what the other gods could not, then you would join me, and with our powers combined, we could finally end all the pain, all the suffering, the destruction they bring. And we could return this world to the paradise it was before them. Forever.
I could never be a part of that.
Stop it now and then skip forward to 201:50. Keep going. You're at 158. Keep going.
12 more
has it crashed? That's entirely possible. It's not disastrous, not because I can just tell you what's about to happen. That's 159.40. Keep going. A little bit more. Back a bit. There. Video unavailable. Great. We got 40 seconds of it. That's enough to make a start. If you go to the next slide when you can, Brian, that will have some of the words that the evil baddie said to the one after that. Evil baddie didn't quote Philippians 4. This is what the evil baddie said. As if you notice, the world behind it turned from a horrible place to live to this perfect paradise. He tried to convince Diana to end all the pain, to end all the suffering, the destruction that they bring, they being humanity, to return this world to the paradise it was before them forever. He says, look at this world of violence and death. Mankind did this, not me. He says, mankind are ugly, filled with hatred, weak. They are unworthy of your sympathy in every way and to be destroyed. He actually gets quite a lot of stuff right, doesn't he? What does he get? He gets that this world is a mess. I guess that's more evident this week than it is most weeks. This world is a mess. And who's caused it? Humanity. Because inside humanity there is so much darkness. They are ugly, filled with hatred, weak. I mean, the tone he uses is obviously not a way that God would speak about us, but the truths he espouses actually are. He gets something right about what humanity is like. Diana responds to this and says these words that will appear on the screen in a second. They are everything you say. She actually agrees with the assessment of humanity in part, but then she goes on and she says this, which I'm going to turn around to read. Inside every human, there will always be both darkness and light. The choice each must make for themselves. And then classic Hollywood. Only love can truly save the day. True, save the world. Again, she gets quite a lot of stuff right, doesn't she? She actually gets a better understanding of what humans are like. They are full of both darkness and light. Again, she grasps the human condition. See, both these people understand that there is a fundamental problem with humanity. But they have pretty different options for how to solve that. So option A, the baddie, what's his solution? Punish humanity. Wipe them out, and that will solve all our problems. And then the gods can enjoy this world how it should have been. What's Diana's solution? Option B, humans can save themselves. Because even after thousands of years of humans continually choosing darkness over light, maybe finally they'll sort it out and they'll start choosing light. Two options presented as to how salvation comes. They both grasp something of the human condition. They present options as to how to solve it. Option one, punish humanity. Option two, humans save themselves. Both of those options are so deficient, aren't they? They both leave you crying out for option C. Because as you see both of them, well, you know punishing humanity, that would be awful. Because it would be just, but it means that we'd all be wiped out. You know, humans saving themselves, that's just folly. Because it's not worked. Time and time again, it's proven not to work. And so we are there craving, as you watch the film, we are craving for a solution that might actually work. And this is where, as I watch this film, actually every time I watch this film, I go away loving Jesus more. Because I see that there is an option C. And the option C is this. That Jesus is punished so that humans can be saved. Option A is awful because it leads to our destruction. Option B is folly because it doesn't work. Option C is glorious because it gives us the hope that we need. It shows us how salvation truly comes. And so you can watch what on the surface is just generic fighty entertainment and come away genuinely loving Jesus more. That's what happened for me. Because you see the folly, the weakness of the stories our world is telling. When you have your wits about you, it drives you to Jesus in a new and beautiful way as you're struck just how much he is the answer to the problems our world faces. Let me take you back to that Lilo we thought about at the start. We can enjoy the Lilo, can't we? We can enjoy lying on the Lilo, but we need to be aware. We need to be aware that if we think we're on a swimming pool, we're not. We're on an ocean. We need to keep our wits about us. Because storytellers are story sellers, and they are really good at it. So we need to be discerning, to have our wits about us. And there's a slide which will give us two questions to think about as we watch such things, as we watch anything in our world itself. Here are two simple questions to ask. How is this good and praiseworthy? What in this is good and praiseworthy? What in this is deficient and distorted? Because every single thing you watch, read, or listen to, whether it's a fiction novel, whether it's the news, whether it's a podcast, whether it's the latest chart hit, or whether it's a film, or anything else I haven't mentioned, will have elements of both of these. It will have elements of both of these. And so, as you watch with these very simple two questions going on, you can be driven to love Jesus more because you see something that is good and praiseworthy and that is produced by people who are incredible at making things that pull on our heartstrings, that picture things in a way that we just can't even imagine. We can see the good and we see what's deficient and distorted about that, and it drives us to Jesus, the one who is not deficient or distorted in any way. As we watch things, as we read things, whatever it is for you, do so in such a way that as you hear the stories our world is telling, you are driven to the most wondrous story of all, the wondrous story of the Christ who died to save a doomed humanity. And as you do that, that will equip you not only to follow him better, but also to speak of him in ways that really grip our culture around us. That's what I'd love to see happen. Let me pray, and then we're going to sing. Father in heaven, the world is desperate to sell us its stories, and it has good in those stories. Please help us to see the good. But Father, please, where there is distortion, help us to see that as well. Help us to be those who are driven to Jesus, to see him as this beautiful, glorious, wondrous story. And so treasure him and proclaim him at every opportunity in a way that really grips the world around us, we pray. Pray these things in his name. Amen.